Welcome to the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, a show that helps you learn how planners can generate significantly more wealth now. Nathan will answer your questions about business or personal finance, or how to increase current cash flows and generate retirement savings to make sure you're on the right path, and so much more. Whatever your financial goal, Nathan can get you there faster. And now, here's your host, Nathan Ross.
Welcome to this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. We're glad you could join us today once again. And for those of you that tune in regularly, you know that I'm going to remind you that just because you listen to today's show or see us on a website or other medium, that doesn't make you a client regarding any of the strategies or opportunities for investing that you might see. And as you further know, we don't sell investments. We don't recommend investments. We simply help you understand the math that you might be signing up for on a deal that you're considering. And we try to use our insights into the commercial real estate space, primarily in the multifamily apartment building space, to help you understand, one, does the math make sense? What the math is, I guess, that's the first thing. And then does it make sense? And then we also review the stack of what I referred to as the deal docs, which would be things like a private placement memorandum, a PPM, or a operating agreement, company agreement, which is the Bible for how that partnership will be operated. And we try to make sure that you understand assorted of the important provisions that are contained therein. If you don't have advisors to review your potential strategies or investments that you want to use in the real estate taxation area, the use of retirement funds to invest in real estate, the private partnership memorandums and operating agreements, and lastly, if you don't have advisors that very importantly understand how to get you to the zero tax rate as you approach retirement, then go to our website at beaplanner.com. That's beaplanner.com, and top right you'll see a forms link along with a call link. And if you'll go to the forms link, complete at least step one, all the steps. I think there's four total if you own your own business or are responsible for reporting for a business. And if you'll fill those forms out, we'll be happy to connect with you, and you can then go schedule a call. And we will be more than happy to discuss your goals and objectives and how or if we might be able to sync up with those. Okay, well, let's take care of some of the news. Since the Friday show, I've only added one article because it covered some points in a fairly succinct fashion that I think we just assume people that tune it to tune in to listen are already familiar with, and maybe you're not. And so, if you're new to apartments and you're just now thinking for the first time, or maybe the first time in earnest, because of frustrations you might be having with other investment arenas such as the stock market, you might not fully understand how money gets made in the apartment space, and it's not obvious. I know when I was first exposed to real estate private partnership syndications, God, I hate to think how long it's been, but it's been just over 20 years. 2003 is when I first learned about that area and was fortunate enough to find a local group in Houston where I was living at the time, and went and listened to folks that were already doing what I was interested in doing. And I would strongly encourage you to at least go listen. Now, whether or not you move past that point, it's always interesting. You know, if you're the right personality type, you may go too fast, or if you're the right personality type, you may go too slow. But in any event, there's a speed for everybody, and some people work better in a group, a club, so to speak. Some people function better on their own, and you know, they perhaps like to make mistakes on their own. They learn better that way, I guess, one way of looking at it. But in any event, I'm going to talk here for the next few minutes. We're going to focus on an article that is at the top of my list below the pinned articles at baplannershow.com, the companion site just for our radio program. And you'll notice that we've got a few articles with a blue typeface that are pinned at the top. Well, actually, just below the video of the week. I put a video up Friday that if you don't understand the mess we're in at the federal deficit level, which you really must understand. If you don't understand it, set aside some time here in the next few days or next weeks and watch that video by Representative Swiker. I believe he's from Arizona or represents Arizona. And I know he may come off as a little bit, let's say, odd in certain ways. But I tell you what, the guy's got the math nailed. It's the same math we've been preaching now for 3 years almost since we started our show. And I know listeners probably get tired of hearing how bad off the country is. But we're not just telling you the country's bad off to tell you the country's bad off. You probably have already heard that from others. We're trying to give you the rationale for specifically what you need to do and why this real estate private partnership syndication investment space is where you really want to be in terms of earning money for your retirement wealth accumulation, and getting converted your funds, get your pre-tax retirement funds converted over to Roth so that you dictate to the government instead of vice versa how much of a partner the government is in your pre-tax retirement funds. A lot of people don't even stop and think about that. They just assume, oh, I've got $1 million dollars or whatever you've got, 300,000, as some people might have that come to us. And the one thing they do understand is they're behind, but what they usually don't understand is they're behind times two, because you don't have the number that you're thinking you do. You've got about half that, maybe. And the reason I say maybe, it depends on when you convert over to the Roth side of the house. And if you don't understand what I'm talking about when I say Roth, well, then you've got some more homework to do. But suffice it to say, putting your retirement funds into Roth accounts or moving them to Roth from pre-tax accounts will ultimately result in you getting more money out than if you leave it in pre-tax when you start taking money out, because you're going to be missing a chunk, and it's going to get bigger and bigger and bigger, said chunk, as you move on. And, you know, I'm just curious, what do you think the tax rates are going to be once you get out another 5, 6, 7 years? And if you're not thinking they're going to be probably close to double what they are now, well, then we've got bigger problems, because we won't be able to pay all the interest on the debt that we're borrowing and have borrowed. And it's going to be hard to sell treasury bonds. It's going to be hard to spend more money than we take in. And it might, for the first time, focus the people that run our country, Congress, and help them mandatorily trim the spending. Got two choices. You can either raise taxes or you can cut spending. Well, apparently we don't want to even think about cutting spending by looking at the legislation that passes. Every chance they get, they're spending more money that we don't have. It'd be one thing if we had it sitting in a savings account, but we don't. We're spending on the government's credit card, and guess what? We're coming to the end of the line of credit. It's running out, and the remaining piece of the discretionary portion of the budget that's left to be spent each year is rapidly dwindling, and it's projected by many people, many economists, that we will be out of discretionary budget space by 2029, 2030. Maybe earlier if the insanity continues in the face of higher and higher interest rates. And this may come as a shock to you, but we are spending now $1 trillion, $1 trillion a year just on the interest on the debt. It's unbelievable. And that's one thing that's chewing down the remaining discretionary portion of the budget. Go take a look at the usdebtclock.org, and you'll get a feel for just how bad it is. And on that site, you'll also see the four largest components that make up the federal budget. And you'll see that Medicare, Medicaid's in the number one spot. They're in the pole position. And Social Security's coming up fast on the outside. And then you've got defense spending at about $800-plus billion a year. And then you've got interest expense. And again, the full year is not shown as of this moment on that site. It's a partial year. And by the time we get to the end of the fiscal year, next September 24, we'll be at the $1 trillion mark. It's insanity. In any event, let's take a break. We'll be back here momentarily with more of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA.
People always coming up to me and asking, what's your secret? With all you do, your attitude just seems to be so good. How do you keep it? Well, I'm not the Dalai Lama, but I'll try to offer up a few words of advice. You better get to living, giving. Don't forget to throw in a little more.
BeAPlanner.com wants to ask you, when's the last time your tax pro called with a way to save you taxes? Seriously, do you want to work with a planner or a reporter? A planner knows which tax code sections are the best wealth accumulation tools. Less tax, more profit. Learn more at BeAPlanner.com. The Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195. 713-581-0195. Or you can send an email to Nathan@npross.com. Nathan@npross.com.
Have you recently joined a real estate mentor program? BeAPlanner.com shows how real estate investments combined with proactive tax planning can generate significant wealth. However, syndication terms for private real estate partnerships are complicated. They help you assess the benefits of ownership from A acquisition to E exit. A planner wants to know what they are signing up for. BeAPlanner.com with CPA Nathan Ross. BeAPlanner.com.
You are a reacher, so reach. your care each day. 'Cause I am a seeker and you are a keeper. You are a leader, won't you show me the way?
Okay, welcome back to more of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA. And just before the break, we just briefly talked about the sad shape that the federal spending is in, the incredibly out-of-control deficit that we run, and how that at some point, somewhere out in the 2029 to 2030 range, unless something significant is done in the interim, we will. Life is not going to continue as we know it today, where we are one of the few nations that can crank up the printing presses when we need more money, and literally not just print money, but print, I guess, the treasury bonds that we sell, which it's amazing at times that investors will still buy those bonds. But I tell you what, the term, quote, the full faith and credit of the U.S. government, end quote, is a powerful ability, or gives us a powerful ability to sell a paper that might actually not be worth the paper it's printed on, so to speak. But in any event, Representative Swikert from Arizona points out a couple things, as I discussed this past Friday on the show, that I don't think people really understand. I know when you talk about the Democrat side of the aisle talks about taxing more. Well, you know, we need to get those that should be paying more taxes. Not sure what that's defined as, or I've looked and looked for a definition of who that is. Well, not so much who that is, but what that is. And, you know, it's not clearly defined. It's usually not them. That we can rest assured is it doesn't affect their pocket in most cases, except for the ultra-wealthy. It seems like for whatever reason the ultra-wealthy agree that they're not paying enough tax. And, you know, I've always thought, you know, well, you know, I know it is possible if you want to pay more tax than what your tax forms might show that you owe, you are absolutely able to do that. And so don't hold back. You know, if you're a mega billionaire and you feel like you're not doing your part, well, boy, that'd be great. Go ahead and pay more. In fact, pay some of mine while you're at it. You know, we probably work that out somehow with IRS. But in any event, so as Representative Swikert points out on his diatribe, or during his diatribe, I guess you might say, taxing people more doesn't even move the needle when you look at who you might tax and how much in terms of solving the problem. And further, the other scenario from the right side of the aisle, the Republicans would say, well, we need to keep or quit spending money on things that we currently spend money on. Foreign aid is going to be a big target. You know, you might, I don't know, maybe you don't realize how much money we provide other nations for their defense, for their economy. We support their economy. We give all manner of aid to humanitarian aid, I guess you might say, to help countries exist, and many good reasons. You know, we're not in most cases we're not handing money to those that don't need it, but you know, it's amazing how many oligarchs get created. For instance, I can only imagine what's going on in Ukraine right now. You know, we don't even have the ability to have accountability on how the money is getting spent in Ukraine. We're sending billions and billions of dollars. And the ability for us to require an inspector general type report or apparatus has yet to be put into the conditions for that money. It's just amazing to me how we do that. So, you know, but the point is, you could cut out all the foreign aid. It hardly, if at all, moves the needle on how much additional collections we need to have in tax receipts. Some people call it tax revenue. I've noticed that term being thrown around in Congress. It's not revenue, friends. It's receipts. It's the government collecting, or in some cases, taking money. You know, we've got a pay-as-you-go system. So if you get paid by an employer, or there's other scenarios where you can have backup withholding, banks might be involved on your accounts, it comes out ahead of you seeing it. You get the remnants of what's left after having your paycheck shredded to a certain extent. But bottom line is, those ways of raising additional receipts by the government don't come close to moving the needle. And I often refer to the 2009 study that the Congressional Budget Office undertook for at Congress's request, and Congress wanted to know, if we went the tax rate increase route, what would the rates have to be to solve the ongoing deficit problem? You want to guess how much the rates had to go up? I'll tell you, 150%. Now, that was based on 2009's view. Okay, we had a cumulative deficit at that point of nowhere near the $34+ trillion we have now. It was more in, I believe it was in the $9 trillion range. Our debt to total GDP, think about it as our total revenues as a country, would be, I guess, a colloquial way of explaining GDP. We were only sitting at about, I believe it was 65, maybe 70% of that number. So many people would argue that, well, you know, until you get to 100%, you're nowhere near to having a problem. Well, that wasn't projected to occur until 2040 to 2042. Guess what it is as of last year, end of last year? It was, depending on who you believe, I'm just going to say it's somewhere close to $135 to $150 trillion. And I'm talking about the real deficit now. I'm not referring to the one that I'm going to call it the fake news that will report that we're at you know, somewhat less than this, but we're at 135 to 150% of the GDP that this country generates. It's beyond sickening. And so, in any event, CBO at that time, with even though we were obviously a long time ago and using lower numbers, the 150% level is what they suggested. We needed to move the rates up from their existing 10%, 25%, and 39% rates up to, you know, the 10% needed to go to 25. The 25 needed to go to 63%. That's before you count state taxes, etc. And then the 39% rate needed to go to 88. Again, no state income tax if you're unfortunate enough to be in a high state tax state. And some serious, serious changes would be involving our day-to-day if the rates were raised to that level. And, of course, who in Congress has the intestinal fortitude to even come close? And so I don't know. You're going to run out of corporate ability to pay taxes. I mean, yeah, you can say, well, some of that would be picked up by the corporations Yeah, I'm sure they would initially be the one to write the check, but who do you think writes that check ultimately, right? It's not the corporations, it's you and I as consumers of their products and services. But in any event, Roth, I'm going to keep saying it, Roth conversions is part of the solution of getting your money over to the side of the tax-free world. And if you haven't read David McKnight's book, best-selling New York Times author, Tax-Free Income for Life, it's one of three that I would urge you to pick up and read. And I'd start with The Power of Zero, which talks about how to get your tax bill down to zero each year. More people than you think can do that in retirement. As long as you don't have a big pension, you should be able to do that if you collectively apply some of those strategies. And then the other book that you should pick up by McKnight is Look Before You LIRP, L-I-R-P. And LIRP stands for Life Insurance Retirement Plan. And it's, again, it's a multifaceted approach to get one's income streams repositioned so that they do not pay tax in retirement. But that's one type of investment. It's basically using cash value life insurance. And you may not be a fan of life insurance otherwise, but if you will read that book, you'll get a good idea of a good way to think about life insurance, especially as you get older. But anyway, okay, well, I just briefly mentioned on before we took a break, I wanted to talk about an article I added to the resources page of the BAPlannerShow.com site, and it came out about a week or within the last week, called Focus on Value-Add Renovations for Big Gains. And I know some of you that are listening understand what a value-add opportunity is versus a yield play, or what we might refer to as holding for appreciation. That takes a few more words, but it says the same thing. And the difference is you buy the latter, the yield play, in a scenario where the property is already, for the most part, been renovated. There's not a heavy amount of renovations still needed. Your rental rates are closer to market compared to other properties that have been renovated and have the latest amenities. And, you know, it's true that some developers or some syndicators, lead partners, sponsors, whatever you want to call the person that's in the driver's seat on a transaction that you might invest in as a passive capital provider, you know, some focus on Class B assets that can be spruced up, you know, shined up, and maybe put in the last few market type amenities, maybe add some covered parking or add some garages or put a BART park in for the dogs, the pets, or, you know, you add a smart home package, you you know, there's a number of ways. You put in valet trash service. The better, the more savvy operators know all the tricks, and essentially it allows you to increase your top line, be it rental income or other income, and which in turn results in a higher bottom line, which would be the net operating income. And net operating income is what we live and die by in the multifamily apartment game. It's not like a single family rental. I know I've got clients that have a dozen or more single family properties, and they do very well operating those properties. They actually make money in many cases. And when I say that, I don't mean make money just on a cash flow basis. I mean, I've got some clients that actually have a positive at the bottom of Schedule E. That'd be the form that you report your non-short-term rental single-family properties on, so your 12-month lease type properties, not your Airbnb units. The Airbnb units typically will go on Schedule C, trade or business income, whereas your long-term, 12-month lease type rentals properties will go on Schedule E. And most of those Schedule E's, I would suggest, that get filed in the U.S. Have negatives down at the bottom because you've got depreciation that applies in most every case. But in any event, the difference between the way we make money in the single-family space and the multifamily space is night and day different. And, with a single-family property, you buy the property, and let's assume it's a value add. Let's look at both scenarios, single-family versus multifamily with value add assets. So we pay a certain amount of money for the property. It has high deferred maintenance in most cases if we're executing a value add strategy. So the first thing we're going to do is renovate that property. We're going to put all the aforementioned items in. I'm just going to refer to that as rehab and including current amenities that are being offered. And we bring those renovations to a close. We then consider, well, what can I get rent-wise now that I've made this property beautiful? I've added all the latest, greatest amenities that new properties or newer properties, I guess, in some cases might have. And so theoretically, that's going to allow you to raise your rent. And so anyway, maybe in another 2-3 years, we decide we want to sell. I left out a big step. After we've got the renovations wrapped up and we've raised the rent to a market level, then we're going to seek to refinance the property in most cases where we want to pull some money out. Again, in most cases, tax-free. Why? Because debt typically doesn't constitute taxable income, whether it's from a bank on a refi or whether it's from a bank in general. And so we like debt. We like debt for the right reasons now, but we like debt because it doesn't, in most cases, there are exceptions, though, and far too many times people don't understand the exception, but sometimes it does cause tax. So you may want, you definitely want to check with your accountant before you undertake that step. But again, you'll be a rare exception if you find you're paying tax on debt. In fact, it'll be a good problem to have. Let's just say that. Okay, it's like some other tax problems where I'm not quite as empathetic or sympathetic as the case may be when you've achieved that status with your real estate. It's pretty impressive if you can do that. But in any event, so now after several more years, once we've rehabbed, we've refinanced, and now we decide it's time to exit that property. And typically, I would suggest I see clients exit the multifamily asset more quickly than the single family. And it's probably in large measure due to what I'm getting ready to explain, which I'm getting ready to explain why the magic of the multifamily asset exit with the single family. So when you're ready to sell your single family, you are obviously trying to extract the highest price for that asset, and you've got a limiting factor that we don't really have in the multifamily asset space. And the limiting factor is called a comp. And a comp is a comparative or comparable property sell 2 blocks away or across the subdivision, somewhere close by. And whatever that neighbor sold their home for, and think of it in dollars per square foot. That's the common delineator between real estate properties. You may say, well, you know, Nathan, my neighbor sold their home for $300,000 2 weeks ago, but they've got a pool or they've got a whatever, okay? And I'm not going to suggest that pools don't matter and, you know, lofts don't matter, garage apartments don't matter. They all matter a little bit, but the price per square foot is the telltale variable that you're going to be restricted to. If your neighbor sold their house for $200 a square foot, it's unlikely. Now, there are exceptions, but it's unlikely you're going to get $325 a square foot. That would be unusual that you could attract a buyer, because buyers are looking at the same thing. It's not done, you know, out of the light of day. I mean, obviously, they can shop other properties in the area and get a good feel for what the price per foot is. But in any event, that's your limiting factor. So it doesn't matter how well you've run your single family rental projects, you're capped at what you could sell for by other properties in the neighborhood. So how does the multifamily scenario differ? Let's do this. Let's take our last break, and we'll talk more about that when we come right back. We'll be right back with more of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA.
Take me where I want to be. Big dreams and big dreams. And there are many just like me. With big dreams and faded jeans.
Did you know 76% of Americans are concerned they won't have a secure retirement? BeAPlanner.com shows how private real estate partnerships can increase current cash flow and retirement savings. There are three options to control your 401 and IRAs, but only one will double your retirement lifestyle. BeAPlanner.com for the Be A Planner show with CPA Nathan Ross.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195, 713-581-0195, or you can send an email to Nathan at npross.com, Nathan at npross.com.
Have you recently joined a real estate mentor program? BeAPlanner.com shows how real estate investments combined with proactive tax planning can generate significant wealth. However, syndication terms for private real estate partnerships are complicated. They help you assess the benefits of ownership from A acquisition to E exit. A planner wants to know what they are signing up for. BeAPlanner.com with CPA Nathan Ross. BeAPlanner.com.
Is it easy? No, it ain't. Can I fix it? No, I can't. Well, I sure ain't gonna take it lying down. Will I make it? Maybe so. Will I give up? Oh, no. I'll be fighting till I'm 6 feet underground. I'm gonna woman up and take it like a man. I'm gonna buckle up, be tough enough.
OK, Okay, welcome back to the final segment of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA. And I was just explaining how we make money in multifamily, or getting ready to explain how we make money in multifamily assets. A lot of people don't understand that, haven't invested yet, perhaps, in these partnerships. And there's literally magic to the way that it occurs or seems to, and does it consistently. So it's hard to ignore once you see it happen. And once you've invested in multifamily, I would tell you that it's unlikely, especially if you're passive or want to be passive, which I think, obviously, the older we get tends to be the case. But in any event, there's an article in I guess it came out within the last week at multihousingnews.com, where they're suggesting that, hey, for you syndicators or you developers, sponsors, lead partners, whatever you want to call yours that you're investing with, oftentimes the tendency is to go after the shiny new location or the shiny new property, new build, which, we're fortunate in the markets that we're in. I mean, when you look at San Antonio, Houston, Phoenix, Seattle, San Bernardino, Riverside, L.A., these are the markets where we have our radio show. You've got quite a menu of potential asset types that you could invest in, and sometimes the old stuff doesn't look as appealing, but like they point out, they refer to an article that Gabe Frank has out. I believe Gabe Frank is an author. Yes, he is. Gabriel Frank. I was thrown there by the nickname. He points out that, hey, you've got an opportunity here, especially in today's market. If you already own a Class B, for example, why not consider upgrading the existing property that you've already got ownership of? You might already have some appealing debt that can be leveraged further. And, that ends up, at the end of the day, that's got a higher throughput than starting anew. I mean, if you start new, boy, I mean, it's quite a conundrum getting new debt. And, of course, extending existing debt is no cakewalk, but you're getting slammed now. The interest rates are higher, the loan to value, and that's an item that's kind of at the bottom of the radar when people are considering debt. And it's hard to get a loan to value over 50% now, 50 to 55%, and that really puts stress on the project. I mean, if you're only getting 50% leverage instead of in the good old days, we'd get 75 to 80. Those change your numbers considerably in terms of what you might expect to be able to take out in terms of distributions. And then you layer on the cap rates that are leaking higher and higher. And remember, as cap rates go up, your property value goes down, and that's the direction they're moving right now. They're not moving down. We like it when the cap rates go down, typically, because that makes your property worth more. But in the current scenario, with interest rates going ever so higher, the cap rates are not necessarily joined at the hip, but there's a definite correlation. If you're trying to sell or refinance, and trust me, banks are keeping up with what the cap rates are, buyers are keeping up with what the going cap rates are, and it's not it's never just a seller's market. When the seller has to find a buyer, it's a delicate dance when it comes to the cap rates that are being applied. But you layer on the higher interest rate, the higher cap rate, which affects the amount of money you're going to have available for distribution indirectly or directly. You can look at it both ways. And then you add on heightened reserves, that'd be mortgage reserves, that the lender is going to demand. And then there's assorted other things that come to bear as you get through the process. Your insurance is going to be more expensive than it's probably been in your life. And taxes are way up. If you live in any of the larger metros, you know, Houston, San Antonio, Dallas, Phoenix, etc., the tax rates, property taxes, have gone up significantly. And it makes for a, you might want to get back in bed this morning. It's like, where are we going to go to get all this to come together to allow us to do a new project? But in any event, the value add on an asset that you already own is one option. And value add on assets you don't own are options. You know, you may find a seller that's coming up against a refinance. All the 3-year bridge loan type debt that was used over the past couple of years is getting ready to have to find a new home. They're going to have to refinance it. And that puts some stress on a seller to where, you know, all of a sudden they may be willing to do some creative finance or some better terms, lower prices. I mean, I see syndicators oftentimes act like, you know, they've done a great job by getting the price down. Well, they've done really, in most cases, nothing more than wait it out, because the closer a seller is to a mandatory refinance. And you got to remember, if they want to extend those 3-year bridge loans, typically there's a 1% of the debt amount fee that's going to be due. It's not just we'd like another year to pay for this, or 2 years as the case may be. It comes with a chunk of flesh. And but back to the topic of how we make money on multifamily. So let's assume that you're in a buying mode, or you already own an asset that you want to undertake, you know, elimination of the current deferred maintenance and make that property more newish, let's say, putting the stainless appliances in, the smart home package, all the things I mentioned earlier in the show, and you get your rental rates up, and then you seek to refinance it, where you've got a story now to tell. That's who's going to get the pot of gold at the end of these bridge debt refinance rainbows. It's those properties that executed a value-add strategy, or in the case of one of our favorite syndicators over in the Austin area, Lockhart, that, you know, where Pilot Legacy is the name of the syndicator. They purchased a property, existing 140-unit property that had the acreage attached to add another 140 units, or 132, I forget the exact numbers. And they've executed. They've actually done what they said they would do. They built the second batch of units. They've got high occupancy on that property, or at least they did the last time I checked. And those projects should be able to get refinanced. That said, they're going to have to provide higher mortgage reserves than they may have originally projected. And they're dealing with cap rates that are certainly higher than they originally projected. And so, you know, it looks like, though, they've still got some runway to land on. And those stories are good stories to have when you look at many of the other stories out there. There's a lot of people that are behind on their renovations that they had planned to undertake, and they're not going to get there. But in any event, the ability for you to take a beat up old, in our case, Class C is probably the most common class of apartment buildings that our clients are investing in, and enhance, you know, say a 1965 to 1975 construction time frame. That was before a lot of the list of amenities that I mentioned earlier. There was no smart home package back then. I mean, smart home packages back then might have been a timer that you could put on a light. It certainly wasn't the technology that operates HVAC systems and things of that nature. But bottom line is, when you undertake the elimination of the deferred maintenance, add some amenities, you're able to raise your rates, you get your rates up, therefore you're able to refinance or sell the property at a higher price. You're closer to market. And so you'll sell typically to a buyer that's looking for the yield play or the hold for appreciation model. They don't want to undertake the rehab. They would prefer to pay you to have done it, and they're quite happy to take over a property that's 90%+ occupied and reap the ongoing monthly rental stream. And you know, there's different types of investors for different types of properties, and it just depends on where you're at in life. I know the clients that come to us typically are going to want to invest in yield play type assets to a large extent, but they want some of that upside that comes with the value add model. So, you know, they'll mix it up a bit, but do the value add properties have more risk? Absolutely. Absolutely. The yield play is more like buying a T-bill where you don't worry about getting out of bed in the morning. You know, you've got it covered. And better locations, better quality assets that are typically the modus operandi for yield play type assets get you a more consistent income stream right from the get-go. And just like, again, buying a T-bill does, essentially. So, but that's not where the big bucks are. The big bucks are in value add and, again, the ability to navigate the current market, which is easier said than done. But in any event, I hear the music coming on, which means we're at the end of the show. I enjoyed it once again. I know I say that every week. I really do enjoy it. It's not like I don't have other things that I could spend my time on. I really do like to do this program. I like it when people, like this past week, we had a bevy of folks tell us they're listening. They like it, had some questions. Don't be a stranger. Go to 713-581-0195. Let us know. We'll look forward to this
coming
Friday.
And join us again next
11 a.m.
for another edition of Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA.